Lights Out Liverpool, written by Maureen Lee and read by Maggie Olerenshaw.
Chapter 1. The homemade bunting crisscrossed the little street from roof to roof, fluttering gently in the soft breath of a perfect late summer day. Half a dozen trestle tables, covered with an assortment of best damask tablecloths, had been set down the centre and strewn with ringlets of bright paper streamers. The tables groaned under the weight of trifles and jellies, plates piled high with sandwiches, homemade sausage rolls and confectionery. Squares of bead-edged muslin protected the food from the wasps and bluebottles, which buzzed greedily overhead. Mary and Joey Flaherty and their three children were going to live in Canada, leaving Bootle forever for a new life in a new country, and throwing a street party on their farewell Saturday as a gesture of farewell. The children, almost out of their minds with excitement and waiting impatiently to be called for the first sitting, filled in the time by darting to and fro in search of tar bubbles on the cobbled surface of the street, caused by the relentless heat of the noon sun, which poured down out of a cloudless blue sky. When a bubble was found, there'd be a shrill yell of triumph. "You want to see the size of this one?" And it would be burst with an already blackened thumb. The grown-ups, equally excited, hid their feelings behind wide smiles and a general air of enjoyment, though their happiness was tempered by the fearful knowledge of what was going on outside their little world. That madman, Adolf Hitler, seemed intent on taking over all of Europe, and gradually, unbelievably, Great Britain was being drawn into the war. Only the other day, anyone listening to the wireless had been astounded to hear members of Parliament being urgently recalled to Westminster. Stomachs churned as people sat there expecting to hear hostilities were about to break out any minute. 2 days later, the Emergency Powers Act had been passed, giving the government total control over the lives of its people. Then yesterday, the BBC had announced there would be special extra news bulletins in the morning and afternoon. In the homes of Army, Navy and RAF reservists, official-looking envelopes containing their recall notices had begun to arrive, and the Territorial Army was mobilised. Already, thousands of young men not yet out of their teens had been called up and were waiting, ready to fight for their country if need be. People felt as if they were on a train heading for a precipice, and there was nothing they could do to stop it. But the residents of Pearl Street were determined not to let this spoil their party, perhaps the last street party they would hold for a long, long time. The women seemed to have taken an unspoken vow not to talk about it. They resolutely pushed to the back of their minds, for today at least, the hideous gas masks collected from the town hall, the freshly built brick shelters to which they were supposed to go in the unimaginable event of an air raid, the impending blackout and food rationing, and the barrage balloons suspended above the bowling green next to Bootle Hospital, which looked so pretty, like a silver flower floating in the sky, yet was there for such a grim purpose. In their best frocks and their Sunday pinnies, the women bustled in and out of their own and their neighbours' houses, carrying yet more refreshments. Although the Flaherty's had provided the ingredients, Mary couldn't be expected to prepare food for 29 children and over 40 adults, not all on her own. The men who didn't work on Saturdays, or didn't work at all, were less inhibited. Many had already become voluntary ARP wardens, or joined the auxiliary fire service, and several of the younger ones were expecting their call-up papers at any minute. They stood in little groups, some playing pitch and toss, and from time to time preventing children from other streets from entering, and war was their sole topic of conversation. Despite this, they too seemed to have been affected by the gladness of the day, laughing more than usual, and snapping their fingers or tapping their feet as if to music. Although none could be persuaded into their best suits, if they had one, most wore a collar and tie despite the scorching heat. The men had already done their bit towards the party, having collected the borrowed tables from the Holy Rosary Church Hall and put them up. As far as they were concerned, the rest was women's work.